You're listening to Commute, the podcast. Congratulations, you'll be smarter when you get there.
What up? Welcome into Commute, the podcast. I'm Dave.
And I'm Jay.
And we are about to take you on a deep dive on three topics that we find interesting, and we're betting that you might just find them interesting too. We can promise you this, you'll be smarter when you get there. On this edition of Commute.
When we think of quick and painless execution methods, seemingly one of the most painless is the guillotine. But just how quick is it really?
Consumer tastes change. Sometimes they change so dramatically that they threaten to do away with certain products. This week, the rapid fall of chocolate chip ice cream.
This Easter weekend, you may have come in contact with a solid chocolate bunny, one of the most popular Easter treats. But where did this association with bunnies and Easter come from? And is there a certain way you're supposed to eat it?
All of that on this edition of Commute. Let's get it.
So Dave, let's say hypothetically you are convicted of a terrible crime. You're innocent, obviously, and the justice system completely got it wrong. It's a miscarriage of justice. But
well, first of all, I would represent myself, by the way.
So that's why you got sentenced to death. Yeah, that's why this scenario happened. And in this scenario, you are sentenced to death, but we'll say that you get to choose how you die. This is kind of dark, but what are you choosing? I mean, you got lethal injection, you got firing squad, I guess. You got guillotine, which is what we're going to be talking about today. I mean, you got a lot of options on the table in front of you.
I'll tell you what I wouldn't choose. Firing squad. Like, firing squad is horrible.
You got to trust a guy to have good aim.
How many?
I don't know if this is true or not, but I've always heard that, like, there's four people with guns, but they load blanks into three of the guns, and then they randomly distribute them, so you don't know if you killed the guy or not. Like, everyone's supposed to shoot, but you don't know who killed
them. What if they are like a horrible shot?
Yeah.
And they shoot me in like the elbow.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything worse than getting shot in like the knee or the elbow?
I wonder if like you'd have a case, like if you'd have a case like, hey, that was my death penalty. Like, you missed. It's on you. I did read about a case one time where a guy sued because he was sentenced to death and he like legally died for a minute. And he came back to life, I guess. Like, he only went to cardiac arrest for a minute.
Did he write a book about his trip to heaven, like that one kid?
Well, Dave, questions about the morality of the death penalty have persisted for a long time. And within that argument, one of the main problems to solve has been, if you're going to take someone's life, how do you do it in a way that's humane and painless? In fact, Dave, there are examples of lethal injections being unpredictable or, like we talked about, firing squads missing their target. But there is one method of execution which has always mostly been considered to be one of the most painless forms of execution, although it may be the most gruesome, and that is execution by guillotine. And while we assume that the swift drop of the blade ends a life within an instant, does it? And while we assume we just immediately die, do we? And how would we even know? And Dave, strangely enough, these questions have persisted for hundreds of years. According to Mental Floss, when English Queen Anne Boleyn was famously executed by guillotine in 1536, witnesses at the event swore they saw her lips moving, almost as if she was trying to say one last thing. Then in 1905, a French doctor, Jacques Barreau, tried to call out the name of a man who had just been beheaded, and according to him, the man appeared to move his eyes and make eye contact with him. But one of the most famous examples happened back in 1794 in France, when a French chemist, Antonin Laurent de Lavoisier, sentenced to death, decided that his death would go to good use, and according to legend, promised to blink as long as he could following being deprived of his head. So Dave, according to the story, he blinked for up to 30 seconds following his beheading. And while there's not proof that this ever happened, in fact, Dave, it probably didn't, because oftentimes the heads were not observable. They typically just fell into a bucket. They didn't just like roll around. It's notable that we've asked this question for a long time. So where did this invention even originate from? Well, we have to go all the way back to 1789 when Dr. Joseph Ignace Guillotin advocated for the use of a guillotine for public execution by sort of embellishing it, saying, quote, "Like a cool breath on the back of the neck, the blade hisses, the head falls, blood spurts, and man exists no more. With my machine, I'll have your head off in the blink of an eye, and you will suffer not at all." And Dave, within 3 years, the guillotine was law, and it stuck for a long time, like maybe longer than you think. France continued to use the device all the way up to 1977, for example. If you didn't hear me, I said 1977, like Star Wars was in theaters. But within this, scientists and doctors have always expressed some doubt that the execution by guillotine is as painless as we always thought. In 2013, scientists in New Zealand examined the brain activity of beheaded rats using EEG monitoring. And yes, they did remove the rats' heads with a tiny guillotine. What they found was sort of surprising. EEG activity actually stuck around for 10 to 15 seconds following the severing of their heads, a 10 to 15 seconds that they could, in theory at least, feel pain. So what about our stories of facial expressions and severed heads? Well, this could be explained by post-mortem muscle twitches, which we may misinterpret to be conscious behavior. But Dave, I'll finish with this, a quote from a Mental Floss article. In 2023, a paper published in the journal Cures summarized the debate. "The evidence currently available to us is scant, and the studies that imply that there is a retained awareness in decapitated rats for several seconds suffer from a low sample size. While the best evidence currently available to us suggests that a loss of consciousness is nearly instant in decapitation for both human and rodent models, it is possible that the truth will never be fully known."
Jay, let me introduce you to a man named Wallace Wilkerson. Okay.
Okay.
We'll call him Wally. So Wally, in 1879, decided that he wanted to die by firing squad, and they missed. Okay.
Did they hit him at all, or did they just completely
They hit him. Yeah, they hit him. And apparently, it took him 27 minutes to die because they shot him, but they missed his heart.
Why were they shooting at his heart? Like, like that's the dumbest place to shoot him at.
I guess they just shot him once, and then they just watched him. They're like, all right, well, I guess we get our one bullet missed. We'll just have to sit here and
watch. It's like they didn't have a backup plan. Like, it seems like a logical thing that could happen is that you might miss.
And he may not have even done it.
Done what? What was he accused of doing?
So apparently he was accused of killing William Baxter, but there really wasn't much evidence. I mean, back in 1879.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of evidence do you really have in... You know.
They're like, three people told us.
They're like, someone visited me. William Baxter visited me in a dream, and he told me that you did it. And the judge is like, seems legit. Kill him.
Jay, as time moves, the world keeps on a-turning. Change is inevitable, right? I mean, whether it's the soft spot that this show, especially me, has in its heart for Blockbuster Video in the days of video rental stores, to a more recent change, the disappearance of play places at fast food restaurants, as things change and consumer preferences shift, we lose things. Sometimes it's better. Like, honestly, I'm glad we don't travel by horseback anymore. I mean, my 20-minute commute to work would be more like 7 or 8 hours. But imagine that. Think about that. You set out on a horse and you got to go 3 miles and think how long that would take you. But other times, Jay, it's Blockbuster and video streaming is cool. I mean, it's nice to have so many things at our disposal, but it also makes me very sad that Blockbuster's gone. So, Jay, what's something that comes to your mind? Either something or some place that you miss or something that maybe you don't miss?
In my hometown, there was like this little side of the road place called Snowbiz. And Snowbiz was a place where you would go and get like snow cones, which was literally just like shaved ice and they'd squirt like sugar water on top of it, you know. But as a kid, it's like the greatest thing you've ever had in your life. And then one day, man, Snowbiz was just gone. Like, I don't know if they were struggling or what. It always seemed like there were people there, but it just disappeared. They got shut down. I don't know. But, you know, I never got to say goodbye to Snowbiz. It just like, it's like this piece of foundational piece of my childhood just ripped away with no warning at all. There wasn't even like a going away party. It just disappeared.
Well, Jay, you know, kind of along the same lines as Snowbiz, change has now come for our ice cream. Not long ago, vanilla chocolate chip ice cream was among the top selling flavors. At one point, the number one selling flavor in America, regardless of brand. But more recently, it's found itself on the outside looking in, with only 2% of ice cream enthusiasts reporting that they would choose it as their flavor of choice. And Jay, while it can still be found in stores from time to time, it's not at all like it used to be. In fact, it's kind of hard to find. Falling out of favor with customers to more exciting flavors like cookies and cream or chocolate chip cookie dough. Chocolate chip used to be a flavor we produced constantly. Carolyn Crowley, communications specialist for Babcock Dairy Plant, told the New York Times, chocolate chip hasn't been a staple for a decade now, though. It's now more of a seasonal flavor, she said. And even in the summer, Jay, it's not the thing people want. For example, last summer, Babcock Dairy Plant took nearly 5 months to sell through the 110 gallons of chocolate chip ice cream that it made, nearly double the amount of time it took for a flavor like cookie dough to go off the shelves. And Jade, the reasons for this major fall from grace for chocolate chip aren't really easy to nail down, but it seems to be a casualty to the growing number of flavor choices in the last few years when it comes to ice cream. Some ice cream companies, like Tillamook, an Oregon-based company, have reported a nearly, get this, 25% drop in sales for chocolate chip since the mid-2010s. So we now enter the dangerous territory for this flavor, where it at least intersects with other foods that have dramatically dropped in popularity and are on the brink of extinction. Some of those are the kids-targeted fake orange juice Sunny D. Were you a Sunny D guy as a kid?
Oh, I'm still a Sunny D guy. Like, if it's in our fridge,
still
yeah,
a Sunny
like if we
D
have it for
guy.
The
okay.
kids, I'm sneaking one all the time.
Well, it's hard to find. And Jay, apparently it did reportedly turn at least one person orange in the last couple of
it's
years.
It's worth the risk.
Cottage cheese is another one. In the 1970s, the average American consumed 5 pounds of the strange mushy food, a number that has fallen to about 1 pound today, a dramatic fall. Canned tuna, the quick yet smelly meal, has seen its sales fall by 50% since the 1980s. And Jell-O, the bouncy, colorful food, well, it's seen its sales fall off the cliff, with Business Insider reporting a decline in sales of over $370 million between 2009 and today. So, Jay, today we spend a few moments grieving about chocolate chip ice cream. But also, I can't honestly recall the last time that I ever bought it, at least on purpose. So maybe I'm not grieving the flavor as much as I'm leaning into the nostalgia of holding on to what was.
Yeah, it's too in the middle. It's like, if I'm going to have ice cream, I'm either going to go real boring, like I'm going to go like vanilla or chocolate, or I'm going to go like, you know, something like Ben and Jerry's peanut butter, whatever, like a bunch of stuff in it. You know, it's like they're like chocolate chips, like it's like too, it's right in the middle. Like there's not, it's not enough too much to one side.
I'll tell you what, like there's probably, when it comes to ice cream, there's probably not a better ice cream treat than a Dairy Queen Blizzard. And I'll tell you what I love about the Blizzard. When they give it to you, they have to hold it upside down to prove that it won't fall out.
Yeah, so you're looking for that. Like you're,
it's an unwritten rule. If they don't do that, it's free.
I would guess that that's probably not true.
No, that's 100% true. If you order a Blizzard and they don't do the upside down thing before they give it to you to prove that it won't fall out, it's free.
So would you be the guy to challenge that? Like, would you be like, ah, you didn't do it.
Yeah,
you know what that means.
there are very few things, I'm going to be honest, there are very few things that I would say, you know what, I'm going to stake my reputation on this.
It's like just a high school kid. He's like 16. He's
it's
like,
true,
he's like, he's got an algebra test tomorrow, and you're like raking him over the coals because he didn't turn the Blizzard
like,
upside down.
Ah, buddy, you didn't do it.
free.
He's like, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get fired, sir. Please don't do this.
Not my problem, man.
So if you are listening to this on the day it comes out, Easter was yesterday, and you probably came in contact with a lot of Easter candy, whether it be in your own house or at work or whatever, especially if you have kids. So when you're thinking about Easter candy, Dave, I'm sure that your family rakes in a lot of it too. I mean, I have three kids. You have two. Like, they're getting candy at school. They're getting candy from their grandparents. Like, they're getting candy from you. So it's just, it's all coming into your house at one time. It's kind of like Halloween. In just like looking at the candy pile as 100%, like what percentage of that would you say goes to you and not to your kids?
I think it's 70-30.
Yeah.
Because they don't, let's be honest. I mean, my kids are 4 and 1. They don't need that much candy.
Yeah, and, you don't want to just like give them Reese eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, if they have a Reese egg, I mean, that's going to me. Because I think that the greatest candy that exists year-round is the Reese egg. It's the perfect balance of chocolate and peanut butter. But Easter's interesting because it has the best candy, the Reese egg, and it has the worst candy, the Peep.
Yeah, just sugar-coated marshmallow. It's not good. We're also going to be talking a little bit about chocolate bunnies. So where are you at on the chocolate bunny? Because like I know for me, like my kids get chocolate bunnies from other people, and I never let them see the light of day. Do you partake of the chocolate bunny? Because I know like half the time I just throw them in the trash.
You're not
to be honest
ruining
with
their childhood, but I mean the Easter bunny brought that. Like that took work for the Easter bunny to bring
now.
That.
Now see, that's another thing I want to talk about. Do you all do Easter bunny? Like, do you do it up? Like, do you talk about the Easter bunny was here, or is it just kind of like, like what do you do with that?
Well, I'm kind of conflicted about the Easter bunny, honestly.
See, me too. I'm in the same boat.
Because, like, Santa Claus, yeah, I'm here for Santa Claus. That's fine. You know, I mean, it's fun. But the Easter bunny's weird, right?
It like, is weird.
A mutant
bunny. When I do this segment, you're going to be even more weirded out by the Easter bunny.
A mutant bunny comes in your house and leaves you candy, and that's all he does. He doesn't expect anything of you. There's no backstory to him.
I'm kind of like, by the time we get to Easter too, this is going to make me sound like a bad parent, but like, I'm like really tired of like the fictional characters by the time we get to Easter, you know, it's like we did Santa, the Tooth Fairy's been around, you know, now we got to do the Easter Bunny too. And also too, like, I just think about as a kid, like I never bought the Easter Bunny, you know, like I've believed in Santa. I've been candid on this podcast. I believed in Santa way too long. And,
yeah, I believe you were 15.
It was like fifth grade.
Yeah. 15.
It was like fifth grade. Okay. Almost middle school age. Well, Dave, whether or not you celebrate Easter, one thing is true, and that is that Americans love to eat candy around this time of year. In fact, Americans will spend an estimated $5 billion on Easter candy in 2024. And when you think of Easter candy for a lot of us, the first candy that comes to mind is the aforementioned chocolate Easter bunny. But when you open one of these treats, is there a right way and a wrong way to eat it? So what do you think, Dave? Is there a right way to eat a chocolate bunny and a wrong way to eat it?
I think you got to start with the ears.
Well, it turns out, according to the National Confectioners Association, there is, and it's just that you start with the ears. Uh-huh. And believe it or not, Dave, there actually has been weirdly a lot of data gathered on this in the name of science. The NCA itself estimates that 75% of people start with the ears when eating a chocolate bunny. A survey conducted by Wallet Hub found that 78% start with the ears, 11% went for the feet, and another 11% started with the tail. Journal The Laryngoscope in 2017 conducted a survey in which 60% of participants started with the ears and 33% had no preference. So from this data, it's clear that most people, at least, like to start at the top and work their way down. But the tradition of the bunny being associated with Easter probably has its roots all the way back in pagan traditions, which have traditionally celebrated springtime as a time of fertility. The Christian church, looking to recruit pagans to their religion, often merged imagery from pagan traditions, ironically, into their own celebrations to try to find a middle ground in which the imagery can stay, but, you know, Jesus can get in there too. The rabbit has traditionally been a symbol of reproduction. In fact, Ostara, the Germanic pre-Christian fertility goddess, kept a rabbit as a sidekick. But chocolate itself isn't native to Europe and wasn't really widely around the world until the 1800s at the earliest. As industrialization made it simpler to produce, it became more common in households in Europe. Tracing the roots of the chocolate bunny itself, though, is a little more tricky. We do know that it was mentioned in the Americas in 1890 when a Pennsylvania shopkeeper named Robert Strohecker created a 5-foot-tall one in front of his store to attract business at Easter time. At some point, that creation took on a more manageable size and became the dessert that you know today, even if it sort of took a wild journey to get here.
So this is local delivery only. So I'm not sure that you could order this because you have to live near Palatine, Illinois, which neither of us do. But for $375, you can get a giant 3-foot chocolate bunny.
It's like the size of a child.
I'm looking at it right now, and it's taller than the kid. So there's a picture of it.
I mean, $375, like they wouldn't make it and price it that way if people weren't buying it, though. So there's a market.
I guess, but ugh. And that's it. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review Commute on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast network. We're on social. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can always say what up at our website, commutethepodcast.com. Music for Commute is provided by my main man, Jason Sammons. For Jason, and I'm Dave Trapp. We'll see you next week.
Are we bad parents? Like, should we be hyping the Easter Bunny more?
Or? I'm a fine parent. You're a horrible parent. You're throwing away the chocolate bunnies? Jeez.
Now, listen, I don't do it in front of them. Like, I don't throw it in the garbage
well,
in front of them.
What's funny is you're throwing them away.
It's a lot. It's pure chocolate.
Hear me out. Here's the thing. You're throwing them away, but you're also the one buying them.